The meeting to order. We will go immediately to the agenda. You have the agenda in front of you, and you have the minutes of our past meeting, which took place on June 19th.
17th.
Mr. Chair, I will move adoption of the consent agenda.
You've heard the motion. Is there a second to the motion to move the adoption
second.
Of the consent agenda? A second by Charlie Zelli. Thank you. Is there further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Let us make a quick round of introductions. John, starting with you.
John Stein, Commissioner of Pollution Control Agency.
Brian Napstad, Chairman of the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Kristen Weeks-Denkinson, citizen member from Southern Minnesota.
Eric Tomlinson, citizen member from Metro.
Charlie Zelli, Commissioner MnDOT.
Tom Landwehr, Commissioner of Department of Natural Resources.
Dave Fredrickson, Commissioner of Agriculture.
Bob Patton, EQB Executive Director.
Julie Gehring, citizen member from Moorhead.
Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health.
And I think Ed has some comments regarding his seersucker suit that he wanted to make this
morning. Oh, actually, it's a piece of evidence. When a Minnesotan owns a seersucker suit, that's evidence that climate change is occurring.
Our sales up?
I think so.
Maybe we can go around in the
Peter Gallery.
Yes. Yeah. Anna?
Anna Sherman with the Department of Agriculture.
Ellen Anderson, work for Commissioner Fredrickson and Governor, et cetera.
Brett Skilbred, Jordan Sands.
David Williams, Biltmore County, southeastern Minnesota.
Melissa Dobrowski, Department of Natural Resources.
Jamie Schrenzel, Department of Natural Resources.
Travis Germanson, Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Kate France, EQB staff.
Jeff Smizer, EQB staff.
Julie Harris, Larkin Office.
I'm Dennis Egan with the Industrial Sand Council.
Chuck Malperson, citizen.
Jason Smith, Army Corps of Engineers.
Sheriff Piper, Department of Natural Resources.
Jim Urkel, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
Allison Governor, Department of Commerce. Susan Heffron, PCA, TECRA. Deborah Moynihan, MnDOT, TECRA. Michelle Ross, Department of Health, TECRA.
And that's it. Thank you very much. And again, welcome to all of you, and particularly our citizens that took the time to be here today. Let me move quickly to the chair's report. And what I'm going to do is just talk a little bit about our process. We were all involved in a process with the Governor's Institute on Community Design, GICD, which former Governor Paris Glendening was here and spent time with us. And I, on two separate occasions, May 2nd and also on June 20th, the first workshop on May 20th was an overall discussion on basically how to better coordinate environmental policies and programs within the state agencies. And I hope you all felt that that May 2nd meeting was valuable and a good learning experience. The second point of discussion during that time was to talk about steps that the Environmental Quality Board could take to better the quality of the state's environment. The second workshop was a presentation of the recommendations from GICD staff and experts, and I'm going to ask Ellen if she wouldn't come up to the table and give us a little bit of an overview on those recommendations. I also want to point out that there are some copies over here. I think, I don't know, Bob, if there's enough.
Just limited to five.
Half a dozen copies of the GICD or the Governor's Institute on Community Design report that you're certainly welcome to have. And so, Ellen?
Sure.
And then we'll open it up for comments after Ellen's presentation.
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner, or Mr. Chair, and Commissioners. You know what? I'm going to just go through this, just read the recommendation summary.
Sure.
summarize the nine recommendations very briefly because everyone can read that. I know the board members have seen this document, and it all stemmed from the May 2nd day-long discussion. These were all things that were discussed in great detail by the participants, by the board members and staff, et cetera, who were there, and then summarized by the Governor's Institute. So recently they sent us the final report encapsulating the final discussion on the second day of the workshop, and that's what you see in what's called the final report, which Commissioner Fredrickson mentioned is available to the public. And so very briefly, the nine recommendations that they are proposing and that the EQB discussed and I guess accepted is maybe the right word. They didn't there's a lot that remains to happen to implement any of these items, and there's no plan or sort of implementation plan timeline or steps in place yet to go to that level of detail. So these are really just recommendations at this point. So the first one is to integrate and coordinate certain strategic and long-range planning authorities, and this refers to existing law that is under the Department of Administration's purview for a strategic plan for the state, and suggests the EQB could advise and participate in the environmental policy pieces of that. Second recommendation is to establish the EQB as the central point for implementing and tracking the state's climate change efforts. Third recommendation is to manage across all the various regulations and competing priorities to have more effective and efficient management of water resources. Fourth is to institutionalize cross-agency collaboration, and I think the emphasis here is on institutionalize. The idea was to create structures and systems that ensure that this cross-agency collaboration that is so well underway with the current administration, the current cabinet, the current EQB board members, how to continue that over the long term and institutionalize that. Recommendation five is to really capitalize on citizen members and use their talents and skills to help direct the work of the EQB. Recommendation, and that was a lot of that discussion was about public outreach in particular, that could be a core activity for citizen members to take some leadership on in particular. Recommendation six, add the Met Council to the EQB. That's pretty self-evident what that entails. And I should mention that the Met Council chair is a member of the governor's cabinet. Recommendation seven, strengthen public and legislative engagement. And recommendation eight, track and report on the state's environmental progress. There was a lot of discussion in this section about different practices around the country for setting benchmarks and tracking progress towards goals and benchmarks and communicating that information in a transparent way to the public. And so there's some great examples out there like Maryland State Stat, for example. And recommendation number nine, develop and implement an integrated multi-agency investment strategy. And again, this recommendation includes a number of steps, which starts with the idea of developing guiding principles to clarify economic and environmental goals to align for investment of state funds. So there's a lot entailed in each. Some of these are really big ideas and would take a lot of work and a lot of things to happen beyond what is listed in this report. So I'm not going to really go into that now. I think we wanted to get feedback and reaction and hear what the board thinks about your ideas for next steps and moving forward on these ideas.
Thanks, Ellen. The second one. Yeah, okay. Comments? No, there's some things that were probably easily done. The Met Council, for example, one could very easily move on that. There are some that may cause us maybe multi-agency investment strategy. I'll take all your money and we'll invest it. That might get a little bit dicey in the
I'll
process.
I'll second that.
Okay. But I think there are some that we could probably move forward. We also have to be cognizant of the fact that at this point we have two full-time staff members of the EQB, and even if we expand the EQB base of to include two or three more, as our legislature has authorized us to do, some of these things still may be difficult given the the current atmosphere. But that's not to say that many of them couldn't continue to work on them as we have in the past in a collaborative method. I think we basically set the bar pretty high in terms of that. We've been working very closely in a collaborative effort for the last 2.5 years, and I don't see any reason why that couldn't continue. So I want to just we have completed the GICD process and want to have some discussion about that as we move forward.
Mr. Chair.
John.
Well, I think the list that we developed in the meetings that we had with the Governor's Institute folks was very useful because it did clarify sort of a much larger potential list of issues that EQB would work on. I do agree with what Ellen said, that it takes a lot more than just making a list to actually prioritize and take action. And I think that one of the things I came away with that I fully support, well, two things I fully support is the idea that across the administration we need to focus on climate action, and clearly that's a priority. Environmentally speaking, right now across the country, that the president's just issued a climate action plan that covers a wide range of issues, ranging from energy and environmental regulation and standards. And I think it would be good for us to take that issue on and work to clarify our state's role in climate change and climate action. Similarly, we've long had the discussion over the years, it's waxed and waned in staffing levels at EQB and other agencies for water management and governance. And I was the one who suggested we take that issue on, and I think it's a good idea because I still agree with myself.
Good to know.
So I would, those, the remaining subjects, I do like the idea of having a conversation about a statewide investment strategy, but I think that would take some time to develop. It's new. It would be a new approach for the state to put in place. Might take more time, but I personally like those two environmental issues as the ones that I think we have the right set of players at this table to really make progress.
Welcome, Commissioner Rothman.
Thank you.
For those that can't see him, it's Mike Rothman. He's hiding around the corner over here.
So. Yeah, they put me in the closet over here.
That's so. Right. Well, we had to put, Commissioner Landwehr next to the teacher here because he was a little bit out of misbehaving last time. So you're next, buddy.
I'll give you a ruler. Just to echo some of the comments, I agree with much of this. But one thing that we talked about and have talked about is climate adaptation. It's a subcategory, but I think that's it's something that, in certain terms of a topic, is important. But I also don't want it to be lost that the administration, since this administration started, has worked on a lot of these issues within our own agencies and collaboratively, either in a sub-cabinet level. And that I guess the question for all of us then is resources and the issues that come to the top for the agenda for the EQB. So,
other comments, Eric?
Mr. Chair, I guess I would just like to speak to the point of the citizen members, the engagement and outreach for citizen members. We've had discussions, citizen members have had discussions in the past about what is the role of a citizen member, rather than attending meetings and whatnot. And I think the public outreach is a good avenue and a good role for citizen members to be active in that. And following the GICD meetings, we did have discussions on organizing, having some meetings to kind of brainstorm some ideas and then come back with staff and the board for direction and authorization, I guess. But
well, I'm thinking that, you know, what we would like to do, I guess, is to charge Ellen and Bob with the responsibility of sort of noodling through these recommendations, maybe prioritizing some, and then coming back for next month's meeting and maybe acting on some of those ideas. Would that be reasonable? Unless you have some right now, Brian?
Well, I think I've, during the sessions with the Governor's Institute, I expressed myself as being keenly interested in the water resources of the state. Not only from my personal opinion in the agency I represent, but from the perspective of the citizens. They voted for a tax increase upon themselves to restore and enhance the water resources in the state of Minnesota. I look at the progress that's been made in the last legislative session just with regard to water, some of the statutory language changes, some of the things that some of the pilot programs that are going to be coming forward, the One Watershed, One Plan initiative. I appreciate the Governor's Institute as another pair of eyes coming in from the outside looking at what we're doing and giving us some good advice. I hope we don't, given our staff resources, I hope we don't sidetrack the efforts that we're really getting down the road a little ways on. One of the things I have here is the university's water sustainability framework, and we're actually starting to check off some of these boxes now. And while I appreciate putting together a longer-term strategy that the Governor's Institute can help us with, I don't want to allow it to derail the important progress that we're making in these areas and areas that we need to show progress to the citizens so that this funding activity that we currently have in place continues into the future.
Good points. Charlie?
Well, I just kind of echo some of what we've just talked about here, supporting if anything, framing a lot of existing efforts. You know, for instance, at MnDOT, we're just embarking on a study of what mitigation adaptive structures will need resulting from climate change, having just gone through some roads which are completely washed out by floods up near Duluth. And we're trying to decide, you know, are we going to rebuild a road at substantial cost just to have it flooded out again? I mean, and yet, what are we going to have to invest in for the next 500-year flood that's coming in a year now? So it's, I think that that's something we're working on. And I think to the extent that this helps frame what we're doing in a larger context among all agencies, I think it's kind of a helpful to kind of get more of a public spotlight on what is actually kind of we're actually working on.
When you drill right down on it, it's kind of overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. You've got a sense maybe, Ellen, of from the brief discussion and Bob, where we might want to spend some time and effort over the next month to kind of come up with somewhat of a plan. I'm not sure. The Met Council edition, and we don't have our staff attorney here, but are we free to just make the invitation? I think that they would be a non-voting member, ex officio, because we are dictated by statute who can serve on this board. But I assume that we can just make that request to have them send Commissioner Hague over to participate, or would anyone disagree with that? If so, I think we'll just go ahead and make that invitation.
Mr. Chair, do you want a motion?
I think so.
That we extend an invitation to the Met Council Chair as a non-voting representative.
Excellent. Thank you.
PQB.
Is there a second?
There is a second.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could make an amendment, I'd like her to sit here.
We'll see. Did you ever bring candy the day you were eating candy?
I did.
Oh, you are.
He has a long memory.
I had my penance.
I mentioned to Chair Haig that she was being appointed
to
a mandatory.
Okay.
She found that very curious. She goes, really?
Yeah, yeah. So she's skeptical about it.
Well, I've said it's a good thing. But yeah. We might suggest that if she can't make it, and the administrator would be helpful to mm-hmm. have him here.
Mm-hmm. 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 All right. Perfect. Okay. I
Mr.
want
Chair,
to, yeah,
just,
before we,
yeah, I'm just sort of, yeah. Just, yeah, thank you. If I could just make a quick, three really quick points in conclusion here is, well, I think the point's very well taken that this is not, I mean, during the discussion with GICD, during the workshop, it was very clear that nobody in Minnesota is interested in having a giant super agency that takes over all these ideas. Sure. That maybe some other states have tried that, but that's not our intention here. And I think the point's been very well made by Commissioner Napstad, Commissioner Zelli, and Commissioner Fredrickson that there's a lot of existing efforts already underway, and the first step would be to coordinate those and identify those, coordinate them, communicate those, and then you can sort of identify where there may be gaps. But it's about a lot of support from agency staff is the only way that these kind of really big ideas and big goals will be able to move forward, because the EQB will only be able to take on these big things in with that sort of support from all the different agencies. It can't do it alone just with EQB staff, because they have a very heavy workload. So I think that point is well taken. I just wanted to also point out that the recommendations and the discussion and the conclusions, I think, very closely follow this year-long process of public engagement. And so I just think that's important to comment that all of you have taken that very much to heart, the input you receive from citizens around the state at the forums, at the Congress, from the youth. And much of this really reflects what you heard from citizens of Minnesota. So I think it's nice just to point that out for the record. And finally, I just wanted to mention that the Governor's Institute did comment that in some of the states where they've gone into work, they found themselves in a position of introducing cabinet members to each other and saying, have you met so-and-so? And they were very, very impressed at what a good working relationship all of you have and the amount of collaboration that already exists. So I just wanted to compliment you all on that.
They did say thus far, right?
Thanks.
Thanks, Ellen. Also, before we go to the next item on the agenda, I want to read a letter that has been addressed to Kate France and Jeff Smizer and colleagues. And it is on your desk, but for the benefit of those that don't have it, dear Ms. France and Mr. Schmeiser and colleagues, the Legislative Research Librarians, LRL, section of the National Conference of State Legislatures, NCSL, is pleased to present a 2013 Notable Documents Award to you and your numerous colleagues for the publication Report on Silica Sand. In the category of natural resources, we commend your publication as innovative in providing substantive information on contemporary issues of interest to legislatures. The Notable Documents Award winners will be recognized at the NCSL Legislative Summit in Atlanta, Georgia, during the LRL, or Legislative Research Librarians Business Meeting on Wednesday, August 14th. The LRL business meeting will be held in the Georgia World Congress Center. We cordially invite you to attend and receive your award in person. If you or a designee are unable to attend, we will mail a certificate to you after the legislative summit. In addition, all award-winning resources will be featured this fall in publications reaching legislators and staff. Congratulations on creating an outstanding publication in the service of government. Sincerely yours, Elizabeth Lincoln, Chair, LRL Notable Documents Award Committee, Minnesota Reference Library. And so with that, I also wish to acknowledge and congratulate Kate and Jeff for outstanding work and staff on putting that down. Well done. Excellent. Bob, let us go then to Executive Director's report.
Mine will be quick. Ellen mentioned the Congress, all the great input we received through the Congress process, which was, of course, a culmination of the executive order process. There is a final draft being worked on and just wrapped up on summarizing that process, and especially now that the GICD process is over, kind of capstoning that process. So that'll be coming out soon, and we'll be able to post it on the website. Also, there are videos of the Congress that are nearly done as well, and thanks to PCA and DNR staff, is that their videographers for really helping us pull those things together, pulling those things together. So those also will be available very soon on the website, on the I believe the Congress website, right, Anna?
You do, but yeah.
Okay, very good. Very good. So with that, that concludes my report.
All right. Any questions for Bob? Seeing none, let's move then to item number 5 on the agenda, request for comments on possible amendment of Minnesota Rules 4410 to comply with requirements in the legislature. I believe we have 60 days from the passage of the legislature to act on this, and so it will be in front of us, and I believe we'll need a resolution authorizing that to take place. So, Jeff, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Just one note on the...
Now that you've been knighted, we have to call
you
sir.
Knighted, yes, yeah. Right. But just because our names are the ones the letter was addressed to, let's remember that there are a whole lot of people from a lot of different agencies who worked on that document. So kudos to everybody, and thanks a lot to all of them. So moving on, the Minnesota legislature did direct the EQB and other agencies to amend rules to address silica sand mining and processing. When legislation is passed that requires rulemaking, a notice soliciting comments from the public must be published in the State Register within 60 days of the effective date of that legislation. So we've got 60 days to publish a notice. The resolution that's in your packet authorizes the chair of the EQB to sign and publish a request for comments on amending the Environmental Review Program rules, which is, of course, what the EQB is responsible for. The other agencies are responsible for their elements of the rulemaking in the legislation. But the EQB rules, 4410, are our responsibility. Just to make it very clear, the request for comments is going out. It's very general. It will not include any specific amendment language, and it will not obligate the EQB to actually make any amendments. What it's asking for is comments from the public as we get the process started. So with that, staff is recommending adopting the resolution in your packet that starts out authorizing initiation of rulemaking, so on and so forth, to address silica sand activities. That we just recommend approval.
All right. You've heard the report. Is there a motion on the resolution of the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board authorizing the initiation of rulemaking to adopt amendments?
So moved.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, just by way of clarification, it took me a while to kind of grasp what we're doing here. We're really just saying we're going to start adopting rules. We want general comments specific to this aspect that EQB covers. PCA and DNR are also doing some rulemaking out of the same piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. I think our staff have recommended, and I think we all concur, that we should work collectively as much as possible. Moving forward with these three bits of rulemaking, because they will have some connections. And so
I think
the
bottom
staff have already had that sort of discussion. We just want to encourage that.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I believe that they're all timed to be in the same publication of the State Register.
Okay.
So all of them will be presented on July 22nd. So all the public will get concurrent notice of all the agency rulemaking efforts
at the same time. Further discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote. Bob?
Ms. Duncanson?
Aye.
Commissioner Ellinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson?
Aye.
Ms. Gehring?
Aye.
Commissioner Landwehr?
Aye.
Mr. Knapstad?
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman?
Nope.
He's flood the coop. Commissioner Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson?
Aye.
There are 8 ayes. It's unanimous.
Me too, even though I didn't call my name.
Oh, good grief. Oh, because I marked you out. No,
I'm not absent.
Right? Yes, you are not absent.
Well,
Commissioner Zelli,
absent,
I apologize.
So
that was 9.
Retiring. Understand.
Good gracious. Okay.
All right. The motion is adopted, and we will move forward. The next item on the agenda is the AW Environmental Assessment Worksheet Form Revision, and Kate is coming to the table and can brief us on the process. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Kate France, and both Jeff and I have been working on the EAW form revision because it is part of the Environmental Review Program, but there are some revisions that are specific to silica sand, so we'll both be working on that. So this is the same item, basically, as last month's discussion item. This month, we're looking to move forward with this form and have it approved by the chair to begin use as of sometime in the near future once we get it posted to the website. So basically, as of last month, there had been a request to compare the two forms, and so that's what the table in your packet includes. It's basically just the two forms, the form that's currently posted as well as the revision current as of July 3rd, and just puts them side by side, the form language that will be posted, as well as the place where that language came from. So more often than not, the language comes straight out of the old form, and nothing has changed, or if anything, it's been clarified or reorganized, but the requirements are broadly the same. Where things have changed, it either denotes the change in legislation, specifically to the silica sand legislation, as well as there was the point of cumulative potential effects that was referred to in the rule. So that's just a clarification. So basically, we're making progress on moving this existing effort forward. This was an effort that was undertaken by a team of agency staff as well as a number of stakeholders a couple of years ago, and had gotten basically put on the had been tabled because we had other things that we had to take care of, namely the executive order activities. So that had kind of gotten put on the table for now. So we were wanting to pick it up and move it forward. So that said, if we included a number of reasons in the annotated agenda, and if I can just bring your attention briefly to that, that really tells us why we're moving the EAW form revision forward now, including that it's improving the EAW process to make it more efficient, more effective. This is consistent with the governor's Better Government initiative and makes the program more effective, clarifies the requirements of the EAW process, and helps to make that clearer and more effective moving forward. It implements recommendations from the executive order that we just went through, that environmental review improvement. Said a number of things about making the form clearer, including specific requirements, and this implements those. It fulfills the mandate in the legislation relating to silica sand, requiring a water resources assessment for projects that may require groundwater appropriations. We can walk through that if you so choose. And furthermore, it also includes the requirement of a hydrogeologic investigation on effects on groundwater and surface water for silica sand projects. We can also direct you to that in the table. And finally, it's an action that accomplishes all of these things with one stroke, completes a product that's already in process, and moves us forward with this product. So with that, we can give you a couple of examples in the table just to make sure that that's clear. As you can see on the first couple of pages, the language is it might be formatted slightly differently, and there will be a little bit of formatting change for accessibility requirements for those with visual impairments to make sure that electronic readers can still access the form. So that is in process, but otherwise it's largely the same. An example of where language has come from a couple of different locations. You can look to number 9 in the new form on page 4 that talks about it comes from three different places in the old form and really just has it in one stop shop, one location that basically describes the surrounding area, describes the situation as it currently stands, discusses the project and the implications of the project, and identifies any impacts the project will have and mitigations that the project will undertake to minimize that. So that's the same format that's followed throughout most of those, throughout the questions through the form, and it always comes back to that. Describe the conditions as it currently is. Discuss the project as it will impact the area. And then identify mitigations and the project, how it will minimize those issues. So with that, if we have questions, I'm happy to answer those.
Mr. Chair, questions for Kate? Commissioner Stein?
Thanks for the side-by-side. And so just if I'm making sure, and I wanted to say this on the record, we went from 30 questions to 20. And so you're 33% reduction in the number of questions. Yeah, 50%. That's right. So the one question I had is I wanted to hear a little bit of the discussion of the cumulative effects decision that was made about where to place that in the form. In the previous form, cumulative potential impacts were kind of at the end of the form, and now it's more closer toward the front, and just wanted to hear a little bit of the discussion about reasoning for that.
Sure. Commissioners, members of the board, if I can direct your attention to, again, page 4, that center row, cumulative potential effects is initially discussed before all of the project conditions questions. So basically, you have the identifying questions at the beginning of the form, the name, the proposer, the RGU, those types of things. But then before you get into really the conditions of the project and the site location, we discuss this idea of cumulative potential effects. And the reason that was done is because cumulative potential effects has a history, and if you look back into aging sonars, it has a long history of being considered as a afterthought or a sidebar. And it's really important that cumulative potential effects can either be considered as one big body question, which is in the end, or it can be considered as each part each question. So that if there are cumulative effects on, say, the geology and soils of the region, karst topography, for example, that can be dealt with in that question, and that the preparers have that option to include it either individually in the questions or at the end so that it can include the appropriate scope for the preparer. And again, the reason that was done is because it has been marginalized in some reviews in the past.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I would add also the old form, the one that's currently in use, also provides that option to the preparers. So we haven't really changed that. We're simply making it more emphatic that this is an important thing to look at. If you look on that same page that Kate talked about, in the right-hand column is the existing form. The very last line, it says, or discuss the cumulative potential effect under appropriate items. So even though the older form has a particular item for it at the end, as the new form does as well. That option was kind of hidden. We just sort of brought it out and highlighted it right up front before they start describing more issues on the project and how it might affect the natural resources that are out there. So they do have the option to do it either way, depending on what's appropriate for that particular item. So we haven't changed it. We simply highlighted it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I and Commissioner Stein, if I may expand yet further on cumulative impacts, because you may remember that the rules were amended, the 2009 rules were amended to clarify the language on cumulative impacts and clarify what is required for that analysis. And so one of the important, and that was in response to a Minnesota Supreme Court decision on Card versus Candy Ojai, the citizens against, or, well, anyway, I've forgotten what CARD stands for. But anyway, which was a case, again, that clarified what the analysis should include for cumulative impacts. So one of the important things that the forum tries to do is to put that in the form of a question in the form. So there is more detail there. It's probably information that always was needed but was not clear. The court case, the rules, and now the form clarify that for the public, and that's the intent. And as mentioned, the choice was of the committee that put this form together to give preparers the option to sprinkle that throughout all the questions or to have one big cumulative impact analysis at the end.
So, other questions or comments? Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff or Katie, I went through it in great detail, and I like your new form. It is shortened up, as Commissioner Stein pointed out. But as I read the form, I looked at it as a local unit government person would be reviewing a form, and one of the things struck me, and I'm just kind of curious, and maybe this is covered in some rule somewhere, but I was looking under the traffic area, and it talked about, you know, if a project's going to have more than 250 vehicles per peak hour, 2,500 trips a day. And it just struck me, just after having come out of the 4th of July holiday, are we required to do an EAW for an event like 4th of July fireworks? Because we rarely do anything in the county I'm from that it generates 250 vehicles an hour. But there is one thing that does, and that's a 4th of July fireworks display that includes noise, traffic,
hazardous substances.
Pardon me?
Hazardous substances.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I assume you're referring to all the beer that people drink during those events.
Absolutely.
First of all, the requirement Commissioner Knapstad is referring to on page 12, item number 18 on the left-hand column, the little italicized statement that talks about if peak hour traffic generates 250 vehicles per day or total daily trips exceeds 2,500, traffic study must be required, must be prepared. Okay, what that is saying is if there's an EAW being done on a project and that project generates that much traffic, the EAW must include this traffic analysis. It does not say that any event that does that requires an EAW. So that's a distinction between the two. So what we were describing, because we've got an EAW going, there's a project that has the potential, it may have the potential for environmental effects. And part of that is would require this traffic analysis if it's going to generate that much traffic. So that's not, if the project generates that much traffic, that's not a mandatory category for an EAW. If an EAW is being done on a project and the project will have that much traffic, then that analysis needs to be included in the EAW, right?
And that's where not having the rule component saying these are the mandatory categories, it's hard to remember.
Yep.
It just wrote all these different thresholds.
Yes, I certainly understand that. It is hard to remember all those. And by the way, we are working on and are almost to the point where we're going to circulate to the different tech reps and agencies the new guidance document for the EAW. We sort of crashed the net on that last week. which is frankly why a number of other things didn't get done. But it will explain a number of these things for people of various levels of expertise and experience with an EAW. I would also note that I definitely am keeping in mind the perspective of local governments who are preparing EAWs. Local governments prepare, as a group, prepare well over half of all the EAWs that are done in the state. So it's really, really important that their issues and needs be addressed with this. My background is serving local governments primarily, so I do have that perspective. So I definitely understand that perspective is important.
Other comments or questions? Eric?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of a real quick tag on. With the inclusion of water resources studies, specifically groundwater appropriations permits, I guess to kind of follow on Commissioner Knapsad's question, that isn't going to be a mandatory category if an appropriations permit is required for a new well.
Ms. Chairman, Mr. Board, that's correct. If it's a silica sand project that might require a water appropriations permit, then that's a mandatory EAW now, if it's over 20 acres and so on and so forth. But no, that in and of itself doesn't require it. It would be up to the DNR to decide if the project is going to require an EAW, whether it be because of the water appropriation or other issues. So no, that's not a mandatory category.
Other comments or questions? If not, vote Brian.
I would move approval of the resolution that the board supports the chair in signing the amended EAW.
You've heard
form.
The motion. Is there a second? There is a second. Further discussion? Again, the process is that I've sat down with both Jeff and Kate and Bob and have gone through this and said move forward with it. It is ready to be posted on our website as the new, improved, revised form, unless there would be a motion, or unless this motion would be defeated, then we would have to come back and revisit the areas of concern. So that's the process. Is there further discussion on the motion, on the Knapsad motion? Hearing none, all those in, oh, I'm sorry, a roll call vote.
Roll call vote. Ms. Duncanson.
Yay.
Commissioner Ellinger.
Yay.
Commissioner Fredrickson.
Yes.
Ms. Gehring.
Yes.
Commissioner Landwehr.
Aye.
Commissioner Knapsad.
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman.
Yes.
Commissioner Stein.
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson.
Yes.
And not forgetting Commissioner Zelli.
Yes.
Thank you. So that's 10 votes.
The motion prevails. Let's move then to Mississippi River Integrated Watershed Study update. And that question, I guess, was on the table here last week. And I think Commissioner Linkstein has some comments to make regarding the update of the MRIW.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know Jason from the Army Corps of Engineers is here today if there are any questions. But I just wanted to report back. You may recall that Kate and staff made a presentation sort of updating us on the study a couple of months, maybe 3 months ago, and we decided at the time as a board to form a subcommittee, and a few of us met with, we had an internal conversation, then we met with the Corps and their staff and sort of went over the project and expected outcomes, sort of the schedule, the anticipated needs of the project, and Kate's got a brief update for us if we'll take that. But I wanted to just report that the subcommittee met just this week and agreed that there is significant interest in the project moving forward. We also see the potential for some very good, useful products that would assist us in managing water quality and water quantity issues that could scale between a very small watershed up to a larger basin scale that might be a really helpful tool in characterizing efforts statewide and then nationally. So we're optimistic about the future of the project. We had a number of questions, mostly needed to touch base, and with that I'll just ask Kate to quickly update us and provide any more context for
Thanks,
board
John
members.
And Mr. Chair, members of the board, so on that note, I was just going to give you a couple of slides here just to let you know where we've been since April when I last spoke to you. And as Commissioner Stein said, we do have the project manager, Jason Smith, with the Army Corps of Engineers in the audience today. So if you have any questions for the Corps specifically, he has been graciously available to take any of your questions. So basically, just to give everybody a reminder, the objectives and the main products out of the study, there are two. First, there's a plan. It's the watershed basin plan that's part of the Corps' project. And then the second one, which is really the one that we're really interested in, is the decision support system. And that has had some it's been kind of amorphous as we've talked about it, and we're starting to get that more nailed down in terms of an actual what it looks like, what it would include, that sort of thing. So that's what I'm like to talk to you about. So since April, we've created four new work groups to work on some of these different issues. First of all, there's this social and economic work group that. One looks at what are the economic drivers in the basin and in the sub-basin, how can we put them into in indices or other measurable outcomes to compare those to some of the other pressures and drivers in the basins and the sub-basins. The next would be an environmental work group that's looking primarily, environmental is kind of a broad word, but it's primarily on the biology, the habitat, quantity and quality in the basins and the value that those provides, as well as ecosystem values that those provide. Similarly, we're starting the communications and public engagement process, which is not only internal communications, getting all the study partners on the same page, but also developing that external public face of not only the eventual users of this DSS, but hopefully those that can help us hone and craft this DSS as we're moving forward. So starting that, and then as well as the decision support system framework itself. We've been cataloging a lot of different efforts that are happening in the basin all at once and trying to determine which ones can work together, how they can interact and integrate. So those are our four groups that just all got started within the last 2 weeks. So if, as you see any of those, you think, gee, I've got some agency staff that really should be involved with one of those efforts, please let me know so that we can connect them up with the work group. Even if that's just a peripheral awareness, just to be on the email list, or if they want to be a part of those work groups, that participation is really welcome. So, and to give you an update, the modeling on the sub-basins for the Seven Mile Creek and the Shakopee Creek geisha models, those are those really detailed models. Those are still in progress, and right now we're understanding that they'll probably be completed around the very end of 2013, beginning of 2014, depending on how things move forward. So that's exciting. Those are some interim products. And then in addition, the geisha models, remember, are more that very detailed on the ground, whereas the HECRAS is a bigger model, and this will be initiated on the main stem of the river in the next several months, and this not only supports this study, but it interacts with a number of other study partners, including the National Weather Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the University of Minnesota, a number of other efforts. So this is a place where we can really get that bang for the buck, which is great. So just to give you an update on where we are with funding, things have changed a little bit since we talked last. I'm in the process of updating our state in-kind accounting. So those are the same numbers that you saw in April. But really the difference that I want to show you or bring your attention to is on the federal side, that not only did we get clarification that the $350,000 for the fiscal year 13 was available, but there's an additional $300,000 made available to the project as well, which is exciting. In addition, there's a research arm of the Army Corps of Engineers called the Institute for Water Resources that has a group of staff that works in public engagement and conflict resolution. And their They have generously offered as kind of an in-house grant or an intra-agency grant to help this project with our public engagement and communications project, and that's at no cost to the project because, again, it's that sort of intra-agency grant. So that's exciting as well. So with that, that's kind of where we're at. I wanted to give you a little bit of time for questions.
Thank you, Kate. Jason, you're be pleased to have you come up to the table and make any comments that you might wish to make. I hate to have you come over here and just sit. And I bet you do too, right? So welcome.
And Mr. Chair, welcome. I actually have a question for Mr. Smith.
I'm happy to have Jason Smith join us from the Corps.
Thank you. Welcome. Good to be here.
Jason, the one thing I wanted you to describe is the model, the geisha model, at this very localized watershed scale and what those models help the overall project do when we talk about decision support. So if you could just quickly sort of summarize, as you did on Monday, the benefit of working on those small watershed scale modeling and what it will support later in the project.
Sure. The detailed geisha model is a physically based model, so it tells you how raindrop gets routed through the watershed kind of in a parcel by parcel basis. So it tells you when the rain falls, it's going to roll down the slope and it's going to get in the water. Models like the SWAT model or HSPF model that are being used by the respective agencies are very effective at large scales, and they're very good for what they're used for. What they do is they take an average and say, if you have this average land use, irregardless of where it falls, we're going to assume that at this outlet you average everything, and that's how much you're going to get right at that point. So the benefits of the geisha model at the small scale is it allows you to see the impact of best management practices, like your tile drain management practices, your riparian buffers, some of your WASCOBs, other soil measures. However, it requires so much detail that it's not practical to use at a large scale. So the real power in what we're looking to do in this effort is to develop scaling relationships so that we can modify the parameters within these averaging SWAT HSPF models so that they simulate the physical representation or the physical relationship of what's happening with these BMPs. Another way to think of it is the models, the broad models, are coming up with the right reason or the right solution at designated points, but for the wrong reason. So we're trying to inform that they get the right answer at the right point for the right reason.
Thank you.
So, in other words, to quote Professor Belf, who's now since deceased from Wisconsin, who said all models are wrong, but some are useful, that works in this case.
That's correct, yeah. And the exercise, we understand that there's going to be uncertainty associated with all these models. I wouldn't come up here and tell you that geisha doesn't have some uncertainty and some inherent risk associated with using it. But what I'll tell you is it's appropriate for a certain scale. And what we've really latched on to is a sensitivity analysis. And the subcommittee got an opportunity to see the alternative landscapes we're looking towards. And what that does is allows us to connect the environmental, the economic impact so that you can start to understand if we dramatically change the landscape, how much could that change it? And it starts to frame expectations, I think, and also allows people to know how much would I have to compromise for you to get what you need and me to get what I need and that sort of thing. So, and then the geisha informs that for additional scenario runs, but right now we need
like
to get those pieces together.
Water quality certification program.
And Mr. Chair, I think the thing that, again, it's not here and now, it's yet to be developed, but the comparative power is really important because, for example, if we want to optimize for water quality for, let's say, nitrogen removal, let's say that while we're on the subject, then we could look at the scenarios. We could develop a scenario that says let's get the maximum reduction of nitrogen in the surface water. What would that require in terms of practices on the land? Again, crudely, but at a scale, you could start to compare the value of and cost of taking that action relative to other solutions to maximize yield of a specific commodity, for example. And that, as Jason just said, is sort of the, okay, so are we going to reach a compromise when we talk to each other across these different interests? I think that's where, as we had the conversation with the subcommittee, we thought this is very important as a tool for this basin.
All right. Any other questions for Kate or Mr. Smith? Hearing, seeing none, thank you so much, and yeah. Thanks, Jason, for taking the time to be here. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I don't believe there's any action required on that. We'll just continue our partnership and continue to move forward. Let's go then to Silica Sand Projects update. Jeff, I'm going to ask you to come up, and John, if you wanted to make any comments about your experiences. Last week you attended sure. a national conference, I believe.
I did. And, Mr. Chair, I'm heading out, so yeah. if it's all right if I go first, I
please.
Appreciate that.
Please.
The I attended last week a meeting in Washington, D.C., hosted by the Environmental Council of States, which is the national organization that all environmental quality organizations are part of. So our agency is a member. The Wisconsin DNR is a member, for example, and various other states are represented there. They hosted a conference on hydraulic fracturing. They brought in experts from across the country looking at a wide range of issues that are obviously environmental in nature, economic in nature, community and energy security related. And so a wide range of perspectives because of the number of developments occurring nationally on oil and gas development activities in the south, in the east, North Dakota, and some of the various shale formations. And one of the things that the various panels brought forward is that there's an emerging need to have more dialogue about consistency of regulatory standards because the industry itself is doing what it can. The petroleum industry as well as the natural gas industry is interested in standardizing approaches because they see benefits when they establish standards for their own operations. But obviously they're getting different regulatory frameworks unfolding, and Illinois just passed a very comprehensive well development and fracking law that they're now working to implement. The state of Pennsylvania has done similarly and is adopting rules and is responding to community-based interests as well as the industry. So I think one of the takeaways for me was as I look across the country and the issues being faced, there are a number of challenges that fortunately or unfortunately you can say we don't have the shale formation in Minnesota, so we don't have some of the challenges that other states are experiencing with the development, but we are going to see continued growth in the industry, that's clear. Given the available resources, projections from the energy folks are that this is about a 20 to 50 year process to fully develop the nation's energy resources in natural gas and oil. It is currently, if Mike Rothman might have a more accurate number, but I think in the year 2000, natural gas or domestically produced natural gas from shale formations was about 1% of our overall national production of natural gas. It's now about 35% of our national production. And so it's growing. It's rapidly growing, and it is a huge energy security interest for the nation. The other subject that was discussed with some passion that I hadn't heard before was the accounting method for carbon and greenhouse gas emissions, which when formations are opened up and there's a lot of flaring that goes on in the well development process, so you're releasing a lot of carbon equivalents into the atmosphere through methane releases, and how that will be accounted for is a very unfolding scientific argument. There are people trying to measure it directly, so there are devices being tested and manufactured to see if there's a more accurate method to determine how much carbon is leaving a well development site, for example, or a transfer facility. Again, these are issues that we don't have directly here in our state, but I was struck by the complexity of the challenge. There were about 150 people who attended this conference, most of them state regulators and industry and environmental association representatives. It was a very good meeting, and I'll share the notes as they come out with members of the board and also the various interested parties. If you're interested, let me know. I'll share that information. It was there's more to follow on the, I would say, on the state perspectives that came forward. The states asked for coordination among the states as well as with the federal agencies so that we weren't working at counter purposes.
All right. Thanks for that report, Commissioner.
Thank you.
And safe travels. Jeff?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, wanted to give you an update on where things are at on the different elements of the new legislation regarding silica sand, meaning House File 976. In no particular order, one of the requirements of the new legislation is that whenever there's maybe a need for appropriation permit from the DNR for a project, that there be an assessment of the water resources being appropriated, and also for the new category for EAWs for silica sand, the requirement that a hydrogeological investigation be included in the EAW. As of about 15 minutes ago, we can check those off the list because we just included those in the new EAW form, the new EAW requirements. So just checked them off for you.
Wow.
See how fast you were?
You got that report.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, that award. I mean, golly. Way out ahead.
The you plural got that report, meaning everybody who worked on it. Another part of the one of the requirements in the legislation is the library of permits and ordinances used to regulate silica sand by local governments. We are, in fact, before this legislation even passed, we were in the process of commencing to start setting up a database, which the EQB has never had, for the many documents and things that have been produced that are going to be revised and that we anticipate will be produced, such as the silica sand report, the executive order report, so on and so forth, but primarily for environmental review documents. That was the catalyst that got us looking at this a number of months back. Then the legislation was passed. We said, oh, okay, we've got the ball rolling on putting together a database. What is a library but a database? So what we learn will be used to put together, to establish the system for creating and maintaining the library. Even before that's ready, we will be soon, I'm thinking next week, actually start contacting local governments to get copies of their permits, ordinances, and things that we will be able to enter into the library database once it's up and running. So that's rolling. The model standards, the model standards and criteria for silica sand that the EQB is responsible for putting together, we're reviewing what the legislation says. We will be looking at ordinances. Oh, by the way, once we start collecting the local ordinances and permits and things for the library, that's going to be a good resource for putting together model standards. So those two really sort of overlap. So we'll be collecting those and looking at those and see what could be used from what's existing out there already to put together some recommendations for model standards and criteria. We've got, as you know, the meetings on August 2nd in Red Wing and Winona. For those who don't know in the room, a number of commissioners of different agencies and agency staff will be meeting with local governments in Red Wing and Anoka, one place in the morning, one place in the afternoon, on August 2nd.
Winona.
Sorry, isn't that what I said? Red Wing and Winona?
You said Anoka.
Sorry. Red Wing and Winona to listen to their concerns.
I'm not going to be in Anoka.
Okay. Well, yeah, but see, Commissioner Zelli wasn't supposed to be here, and he was, so we never know, right, what to believe.
We don't know the room yet, right? So maybe
Yeah, I think it's getting close. I think it's getting close to being established, exactly. And that letter is supposed to go out this week specifying exactly where and the time of those meetings. We will, the purpose of those meetings is to ask the local governments, what do you need from us? We are going to be putting together the model standards. What do you need to have addressed? I've also actually been talking with a few people out there in the staffs of, so far, air quality and transportation have been the top issues for people. So that's, now, of course, those were, who I talked to so far have been in municipalities who don't actually have the mines. So once we get out of the mines, I'm anticipating, once we start talking with people where there is mining going on and processing, I'm guessing that the water quality issues are going to be number three thing, which is sort of no surprise to those of us who have been following it. But we'll see what else they come up with and what else we can learn from them. So that's August 2nd. During that month after that, we will have to be talking with a lot of different tech reps, with our tech reps, other experts in the agencies, putting together the criteria. We'll be reaching out to the industry, local practitioners, and even other states. Wisconsin comes to mind because they've got a lot of experience with this, see how that's going to work. We're thinking that in September, again, these months are sort of tentative right now, but just to keep things moving, we're anticipating having some public meetings, some places, to present some draft model standards to get some feedback on, things like that, throughout the month. And, the deadline for this is October 1st. We will have something. I am anticipating that it will be an evolving product, like a lot of these different projects. I am going to be going up to the Gull Lake area to give a presentation to the annual conference for the Minnesota Association of County Planning and Zoning Administrators to tell them where we're at on the silica sand projects. I'm anticipating I'll have the draft standards to distribute to them, or at least make them aware of, and we'll start getting feedback from people over time, I am sure. I'm counting on it. We will, of course, over time be monitoring the standards, see how they work, adapt them over time. In fact, all of these projects are going to be ongoing projects, ongoing products. None of this is going to be static. Once we get the library done October 1st, we don't just say, okay, it's done. I mean, we have to be maintaining it on an ongoing basis, updating it, the model standards as well. All these different things. So this is going to be a learning process for everybody. So the model standards. The new EAW category that was presented, that was created by the legislation, as I said, we've included the hydrogeological investigation in the EAW requirement. Now, we will need to send out some notices to the local governments, letting them know that de facto new mandatory category exists. I'm anticipating we'll be talking to the Association of Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, the Township Association, industry, that sort of thing, to get the word out there. The technical assistance team, again, this meeting on August 2nd is going to be useful in hearing from the local governments what they need help with or what they anticipate they're going to need help with. And then we'll be putting together that team. That's an issue that's being discussed by a number of different agencies, how that's going to work, what kind of staffing it needs, how the funding is going to work. So that's an ongoing process as well. And the rules, finally, the rule amendments, as you know, as you just supported, we're going to be going out to get comments on the rules, on the environmental review rules from the public, comments from the public. The rules will not be amended in the immediate future. I'm thinking that all these different pieces that I've just summarized are going to educate us and everybody else on what rule changes, if any, are going to be needed. So that's going to be an ongoing educational process before we actually draft some rule amendments. At the same time, incidentally, playing Crazy Eights, somebody threw Eight of Hearts, so I'm going to throw a Seven of Hearts. Rulemaking, the mandatory category rule, rulemaking request for comments is going to go out at the same time with our silica environmental review rules notice. So they're working hand in hand. If you remember that from way back then, that was put on hold until the legislature was finished with its session. I think that's all the projects in the legislation. Certainly can field any questions from the board if you have any.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I was just curious about staffing. I know that we had some dollars for staffing in last year's legislation. You've named a lot of projects that are going to require individuals, and maybe this isn't for Jeff to answer, maybe it's Bob, or it's an open question, but where do we stand in staffing the organization?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Knapstead, I guess all I can say is it's in progress. You know, position descriptions are being written and just about to be launched, and including executive director. So that's all being worked on.
So we're at the job description portion right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, and to that, there's a number of positions in there. So DNR's got a position for the tech panel and rule writing and so on. And in discussion about that in the last couple of days, we're going to take existing staff who are very familiar with some of this stuff and reprogram their time into that effort and then backfill behind them. So good news for us is we'll be able to use some experienced staff in short term and get them on this really, really tight timeline for some of these things. So good news.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Seeing none, thank you, Jeff. We're at the point of the agenda that a motion to adjourn would be in order. If I see no pink cards up here for anyone in the audience that wish to make a comment, but I'll extend the offer to anyone. Seeing none, a motion to adjourn would be in order.
So moved.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion or opposed, nay. Motion carries. Meeting adjourned.